The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 325, recorded on September 18th, 2013.
Welcome to the 325th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 158th episode of Video Game Roundtable.
I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Dan Quick. The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So Dan's back for a single episode for now because Jordan's in the hospital right now. He's on an IV drip, so he should be okay, but he's just unable to do this podcast. So rather than just skip a week, Dan has agreed to come on the day of airing to do the podcast with me.
Yes, I'm pinch hitting, and Jordan, get well soon.
Yeah. So anyways, we weren't here for this feature. What have you been playing? And I know one game you've been playing because I see you playing it on Steam all the time.
Would that be Civilization V Brave New World?
Yeah, well, it just says Civilization V, doesn't it?
I mean, well, it does just say Civilization V, but we got to be specific here. It's the Brave New World expansion pack that came out in July.
Yeah, and I've been playing the same thing. And what I really want to do is I want to play a co-op game with you because it does, when you go into advanced setup, it does allow for teams. And I tried it with a computer opponent, and it doesn't quite coordinate well with me. I mean, it does coordinate, but not as much as I would want to. And the interesting thing is I think everybody shares the resources, or at least has sort like a small share in the other person's resource, something like that?
There is some sharing shared. There are also some Wonders of the World effects that are shared, but others that are not. So there are definitely some quirks and quirks. But the big thing is that you share research, or more accurately, if you're researching one technology and the person on your team, or you could have multiple team members, even three or more, if they're researching something else, then you're actually getting a technology research hit because you're not researching the same thing.
Oh, okay. So I have to whisper over to you, hey, listen, I'm researching writing. Do it with me.
Either that or, an in-game chat if you're not over Skype for some reason. No, I see. Well, you said whisper. Well, if we're not speaking, voice, how can I hear you whisper?
Oh, that's okay. Don't get technical on me.
I mean, how am I not going to do that? That's what I do.
Anyways, there's no gaming history and there's no gaming flashback, just a lot of news today. And the first being Andrew Wilson named Activision CEO, and this comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. Andrew Wilson, former EA Sports Executive Vice President, has been named the new Chief Executive Officer, otherwise known as the CEO, of Electronic Arts. According to Larry Probst, the rigorous search conducted by our board included several talented executives from both outside the company and from within EA. Andrew's appointment is a clear demonstration of the deep bench management talent at EA and reflects our fundamental belief that EA is on track to become a global leader in interactive games and services. Wilson follows the footsteps of John Riccitiello, who stepped down from the position back in March. It was rumored that Peter Moore, who serves as EA's COO, would take over Riccitiello, but that no longer appears to be the case, obviously. Wilson has been with EA since 2000. He envisions, quote, EA as, quote, as the world's greatest games company. This is not about what we're aiming for or what we will become. Rather, it is about an unfaltering commitment to what we have every day. There's an attitude that must drive our culture in one team. I also believe EA's strategy is sound. Our focus on our talent, our brands, our platform together with our investment in next-generation consoles, mobile and PC free-to-play, as well as part of our ongoing transition to digital is right. But we have plenty of work ahead to ensure our collective success. And I'm just going to say it's a good thing they did not take Peter Moore, because that guy is just when Peter Moore speaks, I envision him talking from outer space. I don't think he's from this earth, to tell you the truth, Peter Moore. I just don't think he's a good executive. Anyway, so we'll move it over to you. What do you think?
Well, given that Wilson is the former EA Sports Executive Vice President, I mean, we've got FIFA, Madden, NHL, NASCAR. I mean, sure, most of the titles have a year on them because they're released on a yearly basis. Yeah. But somebody keeps buying them and then keeps selling them. And he's worked at
them. See, that's the thing. I might buy Madden 25. I'm waiting for reviews.
And he's worked at EA divisions in Australia, Asia, Europe, and most recently North America over the past 13 years.
Yeah, by the way, Andrew Wilson is Australian born, and he's also very young. He's 39 years old.
Oh, well, there you go. And you know, the fact that EA took time to conduct a rigorous search, because as you said, Riccatello departed in March. So now they may have had in mind for a while that this is who they wanted. So maybe they made a while, you know, waited a while before making it official. But to me, it's a positive sign that they were actually looking at who do we have within the company. And I suppose somebody might say, well, maybe they should have hired somebody from outside the company. I can hear that argument too. But honestly, given his background and given what he has been in charge with at EA, I think that this is a positive step for EA.
Well, keep in mind, the person who was the interim for after John Riccitiello left was Larry Probst, and he was the one who was the CEO of Electronic Arts during the glory days, you know, from the 80s to like 2000. And from that period, the company went from something like a $10 million or $50 million company to a couple billion dollar company. And then Mr. Riccitiello comes in, installs all these new little doodads. You know, he says he installed the online pass and the mandate that every game has to have a multiplayer component. And the company kept losing money. And EA's appearance, you know, EA became the devil for a lot of people. And I still get people who keep on bashing EA without understanding why, because a lot of the games they love, EA publishes. So you're bashing EA, but playing their games and loving them, which, you know, is sort of hypocritical. I mean, but I just think that they're just trying to get the stench of stupid out of the room right now, because John Riccitiello just was a disaster, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a fine line between love and hate, but, you know, when they say that that we've got this financial discipline, well, I think that's accurate. I mean, didn't they cut like 10% of their workforce back in April? Because they want to work towards a 20% operating margin. And hey, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be cold and saying the roughly 900 jobs. It's not that I don't feel for those people, but well, you got to be financially viable. And there's ebbs and flows, right? New games come in, new games come out. We need more people now. We might need those people again in the future, but just not right now.
Yeah, but did you notice after John Riccitiello left, when they announced The Sims 4, they made it right in the first paragraph of the press release, this will be a single-player offline experience. Like, yeah, we're not going to have things like SimCity again. You know, we're not gonna have online passes again. They were very specific. This is going to be a single player offline experience. You know, like they're saying, John Riccitiello is out. We're going back to the way things were. You know, and by the way, if you notice, what was the other thing that EA did immediately after John Riccitiello left? They did a Humble Bundle. You know, they did a Humble Bundle with a lot of good games. I mean, they included Dead Space 3 in that Humble Bundle, which you could have gotten for $2 or less. Actually, any amount.
I still want to find the name of the EA spokesperson who went so far as to say that the SimCity that they released earlier this year was the most successful SimCity ever because of all the sales that they had.
Well, I mean, you can say it's successful because it made a lot of money. But if you're going to measure it by money, that's fine. But the problem is that, you know, way back in the day when SimCity came out, there weren't that many people playing computer games to begin with. I mean, serious ones. You know, so of course there's going to be more. But I think SimCity undersold, much in the way that Spore undersold. You know, they had the most ever, but I think they're expecting a lot more. And by the way, speaking of SimCity, did you see where they're coming out with the Red Cross thing, in which they're going to give 80% of the DLC price to the Red Cross?
No, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah,
actually,
they have some Red Cross licensed DLC in which, you know, you get your ambulances and all that become Red Cross things, and you know, so you have some. Oh, I don't know if you could call it, product placement, but you know, it's a nice little DLC that you can do, and you know, 80% of the profits go to the Red Cross, so there's that.
Yeah, and as for profits for EA for themselves, well, they did get that long-term licensing deal with Disney, right, for Star Wars, so...
But, you know, DICE had to kick them in the pants to do that, too. I mean, EA was doing these negotiations, and DICE said, what are you doing? Just sign it. We want to make a Star Wars game, and you're not getting this done. Just sign it. Stop worrying about the minutia. Just sign it, and let us make our game. Because games make money.
And that's, I think, also a key thing for EA. I really don't know if Wilson sees himself as a gamer personally or more of a business person. But do you know?
Well, when he's on the stage at E3, he often pretends to like the stuff that he's presenting. You know, it always seems like he's pretending to. So I don't know if he's a sports gamer. You know, I don't know if he's a gamer, but at least he's had 13 years in that role, so at least he knows something about games.
So he knows something, and he also must know something about knowing the right people who know something that he doesn't know.
I just think, you know, he was being groomed for this anyway. You know, think about it. He's there 13 years. That means he was at the head of EA Sports when he was 26. Really? Wow, that's starting early. Or maybe he just started the job, but still, you know, 13 years in the company, and to be the CEO of a major couple billion dollar company at age 39. I mean, that's something. I don't care who you are.
Oh, he must be doing something right. And as I said, history is a good indication of future patterns. And so I think that this is good for EA, because EA can use all the help it can get.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul. Dan?
I'd say let me be frank, but, you know, I already have a name. PlayStation Vita TV announced. This comes to us from Joystick. Sony Computer Entertainment Japan has revealed the PlayStation Vita TV, a miniature system that plays Vita games on the television. The Vita TV has slots for both Vita games and memory cards, allowing users to play games on their tellies with a DualShock 3. It'll support 1,300 games, including Vita, PSP, and other PlayStation offerings. Like the Vita, Vita TV will also support PS4 remote play through a future system update. Vita TV also enables streaming services such as Hulu. The PlayStation Vita TV will cost 9,954 yen, including tax, when it launches on the 14th of November in Japan. That's converting to around 100 US. There'll also be a bundle that includes a DualShock 3 controller and an 8GB Vita memory card for 14,994 yen after tax, or around $150. Sony Computer Entertainment's press release provides some specs on Sony's littlest new device. The Vita TV comes in at 6.5 centimeters by 10.5 centimeters and weighs just 110 grams. It connects to the TV via HDMI, supports Wi-Fi, and has an internal memory card of 1GB. Also, Vita TV can connect to 2 DualShocks at once, and this functionality is applied with PS1 games in mind.
Now, the thing that we must add is that Sony was asked when this was going to come into North America or Europe, and they said, not anytime soon. It seems like it's going to be Japan only for a very long while, although if the demand is great enough, you know, you have to wonder how long they'll be able to hold out.
And there was also the question, DualShock 3 controller, what about the DualShock 4 controller that you're saying is so awesome, Sony? Oh, that'll be compatible in a firmware upgrade, they're assuring us.
Well, you know, they say that a lot. And, Sony does firmware upgrades like a drunk drinks a bottle of booze. You know, every other week they have a new firmware upgrade that takes about an hour to download, you know. The other thing that this comes in conjunction with is the new Vita form. You know, they also announced a new Vita that's smaller, slightly smaller, and $10 less, but it comes in lots of colors. So, by the way, the reason why it only does some Vita games, the Vita TV, is that because a lot of Vita games require the rear touchscreen and the front touchscreen and the cat and all that stuff. So they can only do the Vita games that don't require all that. And by that, we mean PSN.
Yeah, and I think this will be pretty good for, you know, the single player experience, as opposed to, you know, trying to do something multiplayer with this.
Yeah, but it's cheap, you know, and you have to give it that. It's $95, and it's just, you know, it'd be interesting to see how this works. You know, I mean, this could be either really, 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 really good or complete and utter disaster of Virtual Boy levels.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to find kind of, you know, we've got a coverage in terms of, can you game in these circumstances? Does this meet everything that you want? They're trying to fill this gap, and whether or not the consumer decides and says, hey, I would actually like to be able to use this and play, you know, maybe I'm on the go, I can't access the TV, you know, Someone else is using the TV. Oh my gosh, what the heck am I going to do? Hey, it's time to go on a vacation. No, not a vacation away from all my favorite games. Oh, good. Yeah. I can take this instead.
Well, using the hotel's cheap Wi-Fi, I guess. The thing that I wonder is, you know, where their focus is. I mean, they bring out new hardware, but they're still not developing any Vita-only games. You know, and I've never seen a handheld that's so under-supported for the software, but supported for the hardware. I mean, Jordan complains that, you know, he's played all the good games for the Vita, you know? I mean, he doesn't have Killzone Mercenaries yet, but, you know, it's like, if you look at the upcoming games for the Vita in GameStop, there's like 14 titles there, and most of them are crap, you know, to say the least. So I'm trying to figure out what Sony is doing here. I mean, they're investing all this in this peripheral, you know, so that it could play PSP and PS1 games? Really?
No, fair point, because if you want to be able to show us what, you know, the Vita can do, well, why don't you give us a title that's specifically targeted to the Vita as opposed to, look, this can play other games too.
Yeah, the entire thing is that, you know, the Vita can play PSN games, so what? You know? I mean, people have PlayStations to play PSN games. You're not giving anybody a reason to buy the Vita, really. You're giving them a reason to buy it in a different color, you know, only $10 less. You know, I would have thought that if they really wanted to sell the Vita, they'd make more games and just make the console cheaper.
Oh, gosh. Yes, get it in different colors. It's like I buy comic books, not as much as I used to when I was younger, but it's like, hey, do you want to buy like this comic 3 or 4 times because there's a different cover on it? No, I don't.
the Reign of the Superman, I did get both the premiere cover and the regular cover, but not because I was a collector, but, you know, I bought them with a friend at the time, and, you know, they were inexpensive enough, so.
But, yeah, I think if you're going to have and put all this effort into the hardware, you got to have the software to support it. It's kind of reminding me of what happened to the poor Sega. Oh, but wait, we'll get there.
Next news item, Sega buys Atlus for 14 billion yen. This comes from Game Trailers. It's very odd that it's very rare that we get a news item from Game Trailers, since, you know, what they do is videos. They do have some news, though. But this was actually a late-breaking thing from last night. According to a report from Nikkei, which is a major Japanese news site, Sega Sammy Holdings purchased Index, Atlus's parent company, for 14 billion yen. That may sound like a lot, but actually it converts to 141 million in U.S. dollars. It was reported in August that Sega was among one of 20 buyers interested in purchasing Index. This move essentially that means Sega will be acquiring Atlus this coming November. So, it's very interesting because Sega has been abandoning its console, dealings. They've been going mostly PC now. For instance, you know, they've rented out on a permanent basis Sonic to Nintendo. You know,
yes,
they're more concerned about doing PC games like Total War, Rome 2, you know, that sort of stuff, because I think they're seeing that the cost of developing a PC game is a lot less than the cost of developing a AAA console title. And it's easier just to deal with developers like Creative Assembly, who basically fart out these kinds of games like once every other year. You know, they it almost requires no effort from them. So it's interesting they would take Atlus, because Atlus is a console manufacturer, but they have done some PC games. I don't get it, because Atlus does games like Catherine and Persona, and Atlus has been buying the rights to a lot of Kickstarter games too, so it's interesting. What do you think?
Well, I think if you're a PC only or primarily gamer like myself, unless you live in Japan, you're probably really not that familiar with Atlus. And in fact, when I saw
People are familiar with Atlus now, because Atlus is becoming, you know, is slowly starting to come in, you know. And like I said, Atlus has been getting busy with Kickstarter.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, in 2012, there were like 3 browser-based games that they released, and which I was kind of like, oh. And actually, the only thing that caught my attention was, oh, you did Game of Thrones, developed by Cyanide. You published that. Okay. Summary, good story, bad game. But honestly, when I led Atlus, I was like, oh, didn't they have like some medical game? That's all I remembered, Atlus, a medical game. And there was Trauma Center. Yeah, so that's actually what I remember is Trauma Center.
Actually, Atlas, I think most of Persona and Catherine, and only because Catherine's just so batshit crazy. By the way, this reminds me of another company, 505 Games, which has also been slowly growing and growing and growing. You know, it used to be they were just like cricket, you know, their cricket game. That was sort of like their version of an EA sports game. It was a cricket EA sports game. But now, you know, they're doing stuff. They're like buying all these indie games like Terraria and, you know, and giving them retail releases. And then they pick up something like Payday, you know, Payday 2. So, I mean, there's a lot of medium-level publishers that are starting to rise. And also, 505 has been very active on that front. Wait a minute. Didn't Atlas – I know Atlas agreed to publish one of the big Kickstarter games. I don't think it was Shadows of the Eternal, but it was something like that. I'm trying to remember. But they, like I said, they've been very active. And I'm wondering if Sony is getting these guys as sort of their scouts, you know? They look for games for Sega to publish.
It makes sense, because I know some people are like, yay, Dreamcast 2, Dreamcast 2. And like you said, no, Sega just announced a worldwide partnership with Nintendo in May. So you can dream. And hey, yeah, I know the Dreamcast is still supported. There's some small companies that are even still releasing games for the Dreamcast. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah, there are. There's one game that's actually been getting a lot of rave reviews. And I do have a Dreamcast. I just haven't used it for anything lately. It's just been sitting there.
Well, as good as something is, as time goes on, there's just – it's not so much that – it's not that you don't like the Dreamcast anymore. It's just that there's something newer and shinier that takes more of your attention.
Did you see where they made this guy made a port of Star Castles for the Atari 2600? This was like 2 years ago, and he even the normal Kickstarter person would just get, you know, the software so they could run it on an Atari 2600 emulator. But he also, for people who donated 100 plus, they'd get an actual Atari 2600 cart with the game on it, so you could plug it into your Atari 2600 and play it.
And, oh, nice!
You know, here's the wild part. Do you know the game Yar's Revenge?
Yes, I recognize the title. Couldn't tell you anything about it other than it's a game.
It's because this guy, the guy who developed Star Castle in the arcades, tried to do it for the 2600, but he failed. He wasn't able to do it, so he took what he learned and made Yar's Revenge for it, and it's one of the most popular 2600 titles ever. However, this guy took on the challenge of taking Star Castles, which was a very complicated vector-based game in the arcade, and making it for the Atari 2600. Not only that, but he also limited himself to the 8 kilobytes that the Atari 2600 carts, the early ones, had. So what he's doing, he tried to make a game that the Atari 2600 could have played early in its lifespan, you know? And he succeeded, which is, you know, talk about compression. I mean, like those poor guys, you know, 8 kilobytes. And, you know, 4 of them were not available because they were locked up for something. So you had to work with 4 kilobytes. You know, when we look at a kilobyte on a modern-day PC, that is like a period on a word processor.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, as soon as you open Notepad and save any kind of little text...
Yeah, that's it. You know, it won't fit on the 2600. Which is funny because they had the calculator on the 2600. One of the quote-unquote games was a calculator. 8 plus 7 is 15. Yay! It's a game!
Well, if I had the money like a game publisher has, I think having a calculator, that could be a game. How much money did I make today? Woo!
Right. Anyways, now I know you're a Star Trek fan.
My editorialization of this item before I read it is sometimes smart men say stupid things.
Well, moving on. Here's the next news item.
Yeah, Star Trek video game, big disappointment, quote-unquote, to J.J. Abrams, and this comes to us from Joystick. Developer Digital Extreme, Star Trek the video game was a flop with both critics and gamers, and Star Trek Into Darkness director J.J. Abrams was not a fan of the game either. In an interview, Abrams stated, quote, "The last game was obviously a big disappointment to me. We were actually involved at the very beginning of it, and then we realized it was not going in a place where we wanted to get where we wanted. So we dropped out, and they continued to do it. To me, the video game could have been something that actually really benefited the series and was an exciting, fun game with great gameplay, and instead it was not. For me, emotionally, it hurt because we were working our asses off making the movie, and then this game came out, and it got universally panned, unquote.
Okay,
and of course,
here we go. I detect double-barreled shotgun getting cocked here.
Ah, JJ, I know you also claim that it hurt Star Trek Into Darkness by being released shortly before the film. JJ.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
The game focused on the Gorn. Were there any Gorn in Into Darkness?
No.
Well, then shut up. That's number one. That's the first shut up.
That's the first shut up. JJ.
By the way, before you move on, did you see the trailer for the game in which you had a William Shatner and someone in the Gorn outfit fighting, duking it out, but they were just too tired and old to really do much much fighting? Did you see that trailer?
No, I didn't.
Oh, but, you have to. It's hilarious.
I'm sure William Shatner's tweeted about it. I think he'd probably quite find that quite hilarious, knowing him. You know, such as I know him.
He actually appeared in the trailer. I mean, William Shatner himself fights someone in the Gorn outfit, and you know, they're just too tired. It's like, okay, wait a minute, stop. You know, that sort of thing.
Oh,
you've got to look it up online. It's hilarious.
But not right now. We're still recording the episode. But yeah, I know
we do it while we're doing recording the episode.
Well, there you go. Okay, so JJ, I'm a Star Trek fan. I have been since I was 5-6 years old. I've also been a gamer since about the same time. I did not know that there was Star Trek the video game. Now you might say, well, that's your fault, Daniel. The thing is, when I find out that there is a game based on an established franchise, let's just assume it's crap, okay? You also said, JJ, that you were involved at the very beginning and then you realized it wasn't going anywhere. So no one is holding you accountable for Star Trek, the video game. And the fact that you were emotionally hurt, you're taking it far too seriously.
I was emotionally hurt by Into Darkness.
Oh, that's interesting, because I actually quite enjoyed Into Darkness.
Really?
Even
I thought it was I thought it was a big ball of slime. I could not stand that film.
Oh, wow.
From the moment they're trying to stop a volcano with cold fusion, seriously? Cold fusion? That little hint, cold fusion does not make things cold. Cold fusion, it makes things hot, very, very hot. That's what it's there for. It's called cold fusion because you can have the reaction in a normal temperature without having to, you know, that's the entire point of cold fusion. It is not cryovolcanism or whatever. It doesn't make things cold. And, you know, can you stop, you know? And the thing that really bothers me about Into Darkness is that nothing has any reason to be. I mean, they make Kirk and Spock friends because they were friends in the previous movies. But if you didn't have the previous movies and you didn't have the previous show, Kirk would hate Spock. Spock would hate Kirk. And, okay, I'm going to go into spoiler territory here, okay? But I don't care because it's a couple of weeks after the release of the film. If Kirk died, this Spock would say, oh, whatever, and walk away. He would not be upset. In fact, I think he would be a little bit happy in his little cold little Vulcan heart. Not to mention everybody's a paper cutout, you know. It's like the last season of a sitcom, you know.
To that extent, Spock helping out Kirk did seem to be more about kind of a throwback to, you know, what Star Trek, quote unquote, was before the reboot. And I'll say the one thing that does still bother me a little bit about the reboot is the whole Spock and Uhura thing. I'm like, where in the world did that come from?
But why did they even have to have Khan? And by the way, Khan was not a Superman. He was just very, very, very smart. You know, I mean, in the show, you know how Kirk defeats Khan? He beats him with a pipe. That's what he does in Space Seed. He beats him with a pipe. He is not Superman. Of course, I can get into Man of Steel and just tear that thing to shreds, too. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there you go. I will say, as much as I enjoyed Into Darkness, I really liked the rumor when it was supposed to be Gary Mitchell that was going to be, you know, the villain. I would have enjoyed that more. I think that would have been better.
What are they going to do for the third film, assuming there's a third film? I mean, are they going to copy something else? I mean, they can't copy the search for Spock, because Spock didn't die and Kirk didn't die, so there's no Katra to find. You know, let's see, Star Trek. Oh, okay, maybe they'll have whales in the third Star Trek film.
Now, can I start a rumor right now on this show? Hardcore Fenton Mudd is in the third Star Trek movie. It's all about him. It's all about Mudd.
Yeah, that's basically the color of the films. You know, there's such cartoon cutouts, you know? I mean, I don't mind a Star Trek that's action, but please get some originality and please, you know... And since when was Kirk such a maverick? You know, in it wasn't until 3 in which he became a rule breaker, and that was only because he was trying to get Spock back. He's always been a stickler for the rules.
I guess the spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the original one, but that was 4 years ago, I guess the I guess the destruction of Vulcan affected him more than we realized.
No. And by the way, can we stop using Leonard Nimoy? Oh, by the way, that's another thing. Why would they even ask that Spock about Khan? Because they know nothing. It's like Khan is dangerous. Yeah, well, why would they think he's dangerous in the first place unless they saw Star Trek II on the movie theater, you know? They would have no reason to go to him. And
Or from the original series, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
It's just – I mean – are they going to do that every movie in which they have to consult that Spock just to find out? Oh, by the way, Crib Notes, we're stuck here. We need a cheat sheet. Is Spock their version of Cliff Notes?
I don't know. And I think our listeners are now thinking, how are they possibly going to segue out of this? We'll talk more about Star Trek on this show in the future, I'm sure.
Well,
I
know how to do it. Let's have the next Star Trek be written by Orson Scott Card. There's the segue.
Wow.
Well, who do you think wrote Shadow Complex? I mean...
Well, I know.
Actually, no, that's not true. Shadow Complex was written by Peter David, but it was based on a book by Orson Scott Card. So.
And Peter David has written a lot of Star Trek novels.
Yeah, and my favorite, by the way, is the Q novel in... Oh, damn it, I forgot the name of it. It's one of those things with True Q. No, not True Q. Oh, damn it. You know the Peter David novel that he co-wrote with John Delancey that was Q and the universe going through this through the Kubler-Ross stages?
Yes, yes.
I forgot the name of it, but I actually enjoyed that book a lot.
So there's our segue. We both set up the segue.
Before you... Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to turn this into the Star Trek podcast, but do you know that John Delancey is every bit as goofy as his Q character is? That's not Q. That's actually John Delancey. John Delancey is Q. That's his personality.
Which probably is why the character is so convincing.
And why it's so popular.
Yes.
Okay, we're moving on. And also, Scott Card segue. am I reading this?
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. Chair on Shadow Complex 2. Fans don't want it more than we do. From GameSpot. Chair Entertainment are optimistic that the future installment to Shadow Complex lies in the cards. I'll just edit that out. Chair Entertainment are optimistic that a future installment to Shadow Complex lies in the cards. In the cards. Huh. Orson Scott cards, right? Even with the most rabid fans of the side-scroller unable to match their own hunger for more. Shadow Complex exclusively launched on Xbox Live Arcade back in August of 2009. A sequel was teased by Epic's Cliff Bleszinski in September 2011, remarking it was quote-unquote largely designed. It seems, however, that a follow-up never went past the design phase, with the now former Epic Games creative director adding, they, quote, just need to find a partner for it, unquote. Infinity Blade reportedly drew Chair Entertainment away from their Shadow Complex project, which was Epic's debut on the iOS. It went on to be downloaded over 40 million times, with a third title out next week. Quote, we certainly love Shadow Complex. As much as there are fans that want more Shadow Complex, I promise they don't want it more than we do, said creative director Donald Mustard. We want it more than anyone. When the time is right, we sure hope to return to the Shadow Complex series. You know, when you say someone like Donald Mustard, I immediately think of Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space.
And what I thought was that I think he will relish in the opportunity when they're able to catch up with this series again.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'm surprised that Shadow Complex never made it to Steam, you know, because a lot of these games, you know, they eventually make it to Steam. I mean, all PSN games and XBLA games always seem destined to Steam. Microsoft did not own Shadow Complex, though, did they?
I don't believe so.
No, so it's strange. I played some of Shadow Complex. I never got a chance to finish it, not because I didn't like it, because I didn't have the time. And it is very much a Metroidvania type of game. You know, I have to go back over certain things. Have you played Shadow Complex?
I have not.
Okay. So just picture a science fiction version of Castlevania with gorgeous graphics, and that's what you have, basically.
What I would say to Chair Entertainment, and I think I like the part where Mustard says, when the time is right. And I hope what that means is that if you're going to revisit this, if it's going to be a sequel to something, of course, that did really well, then if you're going to put something new in, then take something old out. Just don't keep piling more and more on top of it, because the danger of that would be that it becomes too complex and people who like the original are going to turn away from it, and you're not going to get anybody new that wants to play it because it's too complex and they don't have the remembering of the enjoyment of the previous one either.
You don't want it too complex. You just want more complex. More complex. More Shadow Complex. Yes. See what you did there.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did there.
By the way, now, of course, Shadow Complex also had the controversy because it was written by Orson Scott Card, and Chair Entertainment are Mormons. And, you know, this entire thing about, you know, what's it called, them being anti-homosexual and anti all this. But it was written by Peter David, and Peter David said, look, you know, I wrote it, you know, and I'm one of the most, you know, I'm one of the most left-wing guys out there. So just stop. Stop thinking about this as a political statement. Just think of it as a game, you know?
Yeah, the game itself does not contain any references to homosexuality. Card had nothing to do with
the game
itself.
Except for the invasion of San Francisco, but, you know, that maybe that's just a coincidence.
Well, that's a few degrees of separation, Jonah, if I ever heard any.
Yeah, but that's a joke, though. I mean, you know.
To me, that's just like saying, J.J. Abrams, it's your fault that the Star Trek, the video game, is crap.
But it is crap because it's J.J. Abrams. Well, I just don't like what they did with, you know, I don't mind a reboot. I don't mind if it's action. I just mind if it's stupid. I don't want to. And you know what? By the way, we will never have a Star Trek movie akin to something like Star Trek 1 or 3, you know, in which, you know, there are ideas expressed and having to explore stuff. I mean, Star Trek 2 was about you know, aging, you know, your past catching up to you, you know, that sort of stuff. And all those high ideals are not in these films, you know. I expect the next one, they're each going to say their catchphrase, wave, and then leave, exit stage left. That's what I think they're going to do next.
Yeah, and I will just say, and maybe our line is sticking, you're talking about Star Trek again. My last Star Trek comment for this episode, for the next little while anyway, will be that as much as I like the reboot, I still wish they hadn't done a reboot and we just continue to go forward in the current universe.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know what you could do? I mean, just set it 100 years later so you could have better technology and, you know, have something apocalyptic happen, like the Earth explodes, you know, and it's sort of like Battlestar Galactica except with Star Trek. You know, they're looking for a new homeworld, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Battlestar Galactica reboot seasons 1 to 3, not 4.
You see, I've never watched Battlestar Galactica. I have played the board game a lot, though, and I just got the third expansion, which is Dayfall? Is it called? No, I forgot the name of it. Dayfall? Daystrike? Day something.
Yeah. Oh.
The only thing I really know about Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, is Jennifer Helfer walking with a red cocktail dress in the very first moments of that series. I saw that. I said, yeah, this thing is going to be popular.
Yeah, for not necessarily the right reasons, but anyway.
Have you
right
played
reasons
the board game?
No, I have not.
Ooh, you got to play the board game. It is really, really good. It makes people want to watch the series.
And you see, the problem I have is I live in a community with about 22,000 people, and to try to find anybody that actually plays a game in and of itself
game,
can
though.
Be challenging. And even more challenging, board game, even more challenging, actually.
By the way, a little spoiler here. You know that I'm getting artwork done because I'm getting ready to kickstart a board game myself?
Ah. You are you?
Yeah, it's a hidden role game, but that's all I'm going to say about it for now. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. This is you.
Yeah. Foolish execution of a decent premise. Another editorialization brought to you by me. Steam adopts Xbox One's former family sharing program. This comes to us from Strategy Informer, and I think I know the person who actually wrote this article.
Really?
I'm not bragging or anything. I'm name dropping. You know, I'm just saying. You know, when Microsoft had to reverse its always-on feature of the Xbox One, it was forced to ditch its family sharing, in which a gamer could share 10 games in his or her exclusive circle. Now Valve has decided to take that idea and use it for Steam. The limitation, according to the official notice, is that, quote, a shared library may only be accessed by one user at a time. As the lender, you may always access and play your games at any time. If you decide to start playing when a friend is already playing one of your games, he or she will be given a few minutes to either purchase the game or quit playing. Unquote. The sharing program is currently in beta, states Valve. To express interest in the beta participation, join the family sharing group on the Steam community. The family sharing beta will begin in mid-September when 1,000 Steam accounts from this group will be granted access to share their Steam libraries. You'll know you've been selected when you receive an email from Steam inviting you to try out the new feature.
No, what's funny is that Microsoft said that before this announcement, by the way, they said they were going to find a way to bring back family sharing in like 2014, you know, or maybe a little bit late in 2014. I think this might accelerate that. And you know what Microsoft's thinking? This is our idea. Stop ripping off our ideas. Also, I think it's kind of unnecessary because you can access someone else's account just by logging onto their account on your machine, you know, and just, you know, because you can do it anywhere. It's not
exactly
that big a leap.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if you want to express participation in the beta, join the group. Okay, that's good. I'm guessing by the wording that 1,000 Steam accounts are just going to be chosen at random. But you have to share your entire library, not just specific games. And I'm thinking, okay, but what is this? If a lender is playing a game in your library and you want to play another game in your library, a friend has either a few minutes to purchase the game or quit playing. What does it matter? You're playing games, different games on different devices, not the same one, not at the same time.
Well, that's the way it is on Steam anyway, because if you log on to your Steam account from a different computer and it's on the other one's is going to shut off anyway. So it's not that different from what already happens.
No, but
I think it's a way to convince someone to buy their game, you know, and say, oh, by the way, your friend is logging on, so either you quit or you can buy this game if you want to.
Well, yeah, it just seems like it's like another marketing ploy to me. I mean, if you're going to actually share, then share it. Okay?
Don't coordinate it.
I'm not – it's not necessarily so much the premise. I guess why I'm so annoyed by this is because of what they called it.
Well, the thing is that – you know what? It's a PC, you know. The way it was going to work on the Xbox One, you didn't have that problem, obviously, you know, because it's a closed system, you know, and you're running from the cloud. So, yeah, I mean, but on the other hand, you know, this might actually – and I don't fully understand why Microsoft couldn't have family sharing when they reversed their always on. I don't quite understand it. Is it because they're – you know, because the cloud is still there. You know, I mean, what I don't understand what's going on there. Maybe Microsoft is punishing users for saying, you know what? Okay, you're not going to have always on, but, you know, we're going to take our ball and go home. We're not going to let you have family sharing too. Why? Because we said so.
Because we can. Yeah, there's no that's not a technical reason there. That's having a hissy fit.
Yeah, and I don't understand why they also couldn't have people give people the option of saying, listen, okay, we're going to have these one or two things. Either you agree to our terms and you do the always online and these are the benefits you get. Or you can say, we decline. Okay, well, you always have to put your disk in the system and all that stuff. You know, I don't see why it had to be all included, you know, like everything. I'm pretty sure there are some technical stuff, but that sort of stuff could have been fixed by the launch. I'm pretty sure.
And if Microsoft is now saying they might bring it back in 2014, they'll probably try to make out like it's something new.
Well, no, I mean, they had it first. You can say that. You know what? Under further review, we're gonna give you this thing back because we're so good and nice and clean. I personally did not concern myself with. I didn't mind if it was gonna be always online, really. The person who did care was Jordan, who, you know, sometimes, you know, I hate to say this, but sometimes he wears a tinfoil cap, you know. If there's ever a conspiracy theorist, he is it.
So Major League Baseball is listening to his communications too.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say this to all you people out there who are concerned with your privacy. Generally, people don't give a crap about what you're doing. There's something I like to call signal to noise, you know, and there's a lot of noise. You know, you're not going to find a signal with a couple million people, let alone 58 million, you know, which is a number of people who are logged on to the Xbox Live, even as just a even as a non-paying subscriber. I don't know. But I also don't want Kinect to see me naked. Because, you know, it's weird.
No, I don't want to see you naked either, if that, you know, matters.
Well, that's fine. You don't be one of three people who haven't seen me naked. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next.
Ooh, Elite Club.
Diablo 3 Auction House closing in March 2014. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer by a great writer. Blizzard has announced that it's rectifying what many fans in the series considered a mistake. The Diablo 3 auction houses, both real money and in-game gold, are being removed on the 18th of March, 2014. According to the Battle.net blog, when we initially designed and implemented the auction houses, the driving goal is to provide a convenient and secure system for trades. But, as we've mentioned on different occasions, it's become increasingly clear that despite the benefits of the auction house system and the fact that many players around the world use it, it ultimately undermines Diablo's core gameplay, kill monsters to get cool loot. With that in mind, we want to let everyone know that we decided to remove the gold and the real money auction house system from Diablo 3. We feel that this will move along with the Loot 2.0 system currently being developed concurrently with the Reaper of Souls, which will result in a much more rewarding game experience to our players. And this actually gave players a lot of hope that, hey, they're removing this. Maybe we won't have to be online anymore. Well, guess what? For the PC version, you still have to be online. That's what they said. So that's not being changed. Why? I don't know. But I will say this. The auction houses were a naked attempt by Diablo to monetize the game. End of story. And it backfired.
Yeah.
Because for those who don't know, the real money auction house, you bought and sold stuff with real money. However, Blizzard always got a cut of the money that was being transferred. That was the entire deal with the real money auction house.
And that's fair enough, seeing as how, you know, they're facilitating the transaction and it's, you know,
yeah,
in their game. But
I think we discussed this last week. Not you, but I mean with Jordan. What did they think would happen? Do they not see what happens in World of Warcraft with the auction house? You know.
And I know when I was on the show last year, I mean, we talked about the Diablo 3 launch debacle and also the issues with the auction house. And I'm going to pretend I'm a sponge here for a moment, but not Bob. Why is this? I know they want to give people as much advance notice as possible, but is there some magic connection between now and March of next year, like 6 months? Like, to me, it's like, why not make it like in a month where you've already got kind of the wheels in motion? Like, why the 6 months? Is there something I'm missing?
They wanted to concur with the they're developing the update, right? And I think that's when the update is finally going to be ready. I mean, this is one thing about Blizzard is they're all about play balancing. You know, they're all about play balancing. They want to get this thing down right. So, you know what, and also, it's a soft landing. I mean, there may be some people who really do, love using the real money auction house and are actually making money with it. So it is sort of like giving them advance warning that, you know, they're not going to have this source of income anymore, you know. I played Diablo 3 for about a week, and then I stopped playing because it just wasn't fun. I mean, and people say, well, you have to get past the first act. I'm saying, no, if I'm not having fun in the first few hours of a game, you know, if I've played a week and I'm not having fun, then I'm not having fun. I don't care if it's the best thing in the world 30 hours from now. I'm not willing to spend 23 hours just to get to the fun. That's what the main complaint of Final Fantasy 13 was. you know?
Yeah, that's the obstacle in real life. You go through some pretty crappy things to order to get to the good things, but this is a game.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun. If I want more real life, I'll go with more real life.
I mean, let's bring Civilization V into this. Imagine if you had to do 1 year for 1,000 years before you got agriculture. So basically your game was pressing return 1,000 times. Was that fun?
Oh, it sounds like the Civilization experience in the late game before the Brave New World expansion pack. Yeah, no, it was not fun. It was tedious.
Yeah, well, the problems I had before both expansion packs with Civilization had more to do with play balance and the fact that I was forced. Suppose I wanted to do a culture victory. You had to be very specific and very exact about how to do it. What you did not have in Civ 5 was the ability to adapt to your situation. Because
yes.
The moment you strayed from what you were doing, okay, well, you're just going to have to conquer the world now.
And culture was the hardest hit for that.
Yeah. So, you know, and now, you know, I have the shrine. Oh, guess what? I get to create a religion, and let me see what's around me so that I can I'm going to go with oral tradition because I have a lot of vineyards and all that stuff around me, so I'll get a bonus for having plantations, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But on Diablo 3, you know, I can still see people, you know, even not using the auction house, but for certain things, I'll bet there will still be people trading and selling.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh no, I can't sell my stuff anymore. No, you're just going to have to be maybe a little more creative about it. But the part
you still trade stuff in game when you're playing multiplayer. I mean, but that's actual trading. I mean, that's here. I'm going to drop this on the ground and you pick it up.
Although I suppose you could say, you know, if you send me $100 now through PayPal, I'll drop that on the ground for you. Okay. Mm. Yeah, you just get creative, people.
And the other thing that the auction houses ruined was that those time developing those auction houses was time that they could have spent, you know, making a better end game and having more stuff. You know, it just, you know. What's funny to me is that World of Warcraft was successful because it imitated a lot of what Diablo did. Right, I mean the entire different colored, rarity of items sort of thing, you know, because World of Warcraft was built on that loot crack, you know, you play so that you can get better loot, and then you use the better loot to play more to get better loot, and then you want to get better loot so you can play better to get better loot, you know, you had that little thing going, but
rinse repeat, yep.
Yeah, but the thing, that's an MMO in which you don't mind if you're standing around for a while. I mean, in World of Warcraft, you can sit for 2 hours fishing. Fishing. You know? You don't want to do that in Diablo. Do you want to sit and fish in Diablo? No. Diablo is clicking on monsters, killing them, getting instant gratification, money and loot, and then, you know, killing more, you know? But that's an action role-playing game. It's not an MMO. So you can't use the stuff that you have in an MMO like an auction house, which by definition, what you're doing, you're sitting around waiting for someone to buy your things or trying to buy things and waiting to see if anybody outbids you before you outbid them. You know,
it's interesting, just a random aside word association. You started talking about fishing and I started thinking about the upcoming update later this fall to Minecraft that will make fishing actually interesting. But anyway,
I don't play Minecraft.
I feel sorry for you.
The thing is that, you know, I also have the game Guncraft, which is basically Minecraft, which is a shooter where you can create, and I haven't gotten far into it because it's not my thing, you know? I mean, it's not that I'm uncreative, it's just that the sort of creativity that I do is different from the creativity that Minecraft does.
I know, and now you're making me think of XCOM, and that's just not nice.
I love XCOM.
I'm talking about the the non-strategy XCOM.
Oh, shooter?
It's just
average, you know? I mean, it's not a crime to be average, you know? I mean, it's something that you can enjoy and say, oh, that was fun, and then forget about. It'll be one of those forgotten games. Anyway,
before we move on, speaking of crime of words, when... Blizzard was speaking to Rock Paper Shotgun about the fact that, you know, no, Diablo 3 will remain online only. You know, they said the auction house was never the driving factor in our decision to make the PC version of Diablo 3 require an internet connection. Okay, not a not the driving factor. Maybe it was a driving factor. I like your word choice. The game was built from the ground up to take full advantage of Battle.net, which provides a number of important benefits.
So does Diablo 2, and you can play that off.
Oh, I know. That's advantage, benefits. Not required. I'm using your own wording against you, Blizzard. No. Bad, Blizzard. Bad.
You know, like I said, they compromised the integrity of the game, and I don't mean that as a personal integrity. I just mean the gameplay integrity to do that. And I'm going to tell you something. I still have more fun playing Diablo 2 than Diablo 3, and I hate to sound like a crotchety old person saying that, like, you know, back in my day, we had vinyl LPs, and they sound a lot better. You know, no. It's just that Diablo 2, and you know what? I guess, you know, with Diablo 3, actually it makes Diablo 2 look a lot better, because now it looks even more of a masterpiece of perfect gameplay design and play balance, you know? And by the way, Diablo 2 is freely available, and you can play it without a DVD, and, you know, I mean, if you want to play Diablo 2, guess what? It's free, and you don't need a DVD anymore.
Back in my day, a hard drive was a rough commute to work. Okay.
Moving on. Go ahead.
From Joystick, Xbox One to officially support Unity Engine later this year. Microsoft announced that the Xbox One would be supporting Unity as well as backing independent development. The engine's CEO, David Helgeson, has announced that official support will begin sometime later this year. According to Helgeson, quote, depending upon which platform, there are different costs, but the fundamental thing is that the tools themselves are the same. And once you build what you want to build, you can just export it directly. So now we're adding, in collaboration with Microsoft, Xbox One support later this year, and we also worked with them to make the Windows Store export free, unquote. And back in June of this year, Microsoft revealed that the Xbox One version of the game will add support for Kinect, Smart Glass, and cloud computing, while games being published by Microsoft Studios will get Unity Engine licensing free. And before Jonah starts, I have very few things to say about this. It might be a TD Gaming podcast record for me. Actually, two things. Number one, Helgeson, don't start a sentence with "and." That's the teacher in me. But as for what it is that you're talking about, I approve. Big grinny smiley face. Over to Jonah.
Well, the thing is that this was announced back in June, so it's not news. It's just, you know, saying it's going to be, which is interesting because later this year the Xbox One is going to launch, so I don't see the difference there. But what I'm thinking of is the number of games that are that support Xbox One, and now I'm thinking about the fact that you no longer need to have a publisher to have your game come on Xbox One. You just need to have the typical 2-week check by Microsoft to make sure you don't put any funny stuff in there. You know, like any root scripts or naughty words or, you know, swastikas or anything like that. So I'm thinking, you know, I wonder if Wasteland 2, games like that are going to be, because all these games that are in Unity are being developed in Kickstarter, you know?
Yeah, no longer needing a publisher. It's like being able to have an audio show and not need a radio station.
Hey, you know, I was able to do that way back when. You know, you just record on a video on an audio cassette, and then send this cassette out to people. You know, that was podcasting before it was cool.
And on AM radio, right? AM,
but it cost money though. You know, because that physical media just, you know. Anyways,
I had about 80 cassettes, and I had, you know, like a, you know, a proper case for them and everything. I recorded hours and hours and hours. I had more than one tape recorder as birthday presents, and now some people are probably wondering, what's a cassette? And that makes me a little sad.
I remember when people used audio cassettes as storage devices for their computers.
I guess we kind of had like a little renaissance of that, right, with the digital video recorders and the little mini cassettes. I still have one of those. I was like, oh, you're appealing to my nostalgia. I feel young again.
Yeah, you know, optical isn't as good as magnetic. I'm just going to say that right away, because optical does fade away. Magnetic lasts a lot longer. You just have to keep it away from large electromagnets. That's all you have to do.
Pretty much. Yep.
Anyways, we're going to move to listener feedback. We only have one email, but, you know, and there's a bit of irony to this. And this is coming from Paul Predke. You know why I hate Windows sometimes? Because it decides to do a reboot and a system update while in the middle of writing a comment on a podcast episode. You know, I used to fall for that too, but then I noticed that when you have an update that wants to, it'll have, you'll see this little yellow flag on your toolbar. So I'll always keep an eye there because I know that it means in 10 minutes it's going to start restarting whether I want it to or not. So I have to go, oh, no, wait 4 hours.
Or you can do like me and set Windows Update to just notify you of updates being available.
Never mind. Anyway, we'll let's cut to the chase. I will keep it brief because I don't feel like writing an elaborate post again after what just happened. I want you to keep what he just said in mind.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to feel like writing an elaborate post again after what just happened. Here it goes. Number one, I got the t-shirt. Thanks a lot. It fits perfectly and the cotton quality is excellent. Great gift. For those who don't know, Powell won the contest and won himself a Titans Fall t-shirt that I got from E3.
And just to remind our audience further, what did he have to do to receive this lovely shirt? How did he win?
I don't remember. I just remember he won.
Oh, he won probably because of alliteration in his name, right?
No. I don't remember what he won for.
Oh, just go with that and mess with people.
Yeah.
Why not?
Xbone launch date. I will not launch in by the way, Microsoft bought the domain Xbone. It just forwards people to a search. But anyways.
Smart.
It will not launch in Poland and some of the neighboring countries, so it makes me care even less about the console than I did previously. Because of the limited launch range, the date has everything to do with Black Friday and nothing to do with the PS4 double release date. That's not true. The thing is that I'm not going to even get into it because it has nothing to do with Black Friday. It is the latest that Microsoft could release the Xbox One, though. They were not going to release it after Black Friday. That was the one thing they were not going to do. We sort of have some sales like this before Christmas, and people do get trampled over in stores, but it's still not as crazy over there. Thankfully, there's always Amazon and Cyber Monday, so I'm going to stock up on stuff then. Also, we don't have a Labor Weekend or anything like that last week. Yeah, Cyber Monday is worldwide, apparently. So Black Friday is U.S. only, or maybe it includes Canada. But Cyber Monday is a holiday the entire world enjoys.
There is some effects of Black Friday in Canada in some major centers, but it is not the frenzy that is the United States.
Yeah. No. Also, your Thanksgiving is different.
Our Thanksgiving is also different. It is in October.
Yeah. Three, because, you know, the Canadians and Indians actually got along and fought a war together.
I'm actually teaching Native Studies this semester, and that's... Oh, comparatively speaking to the United States, okay, we can move on.
Yeah. Three, PS4 controllers. Do they mean the DualShock 4 dual... Do they mean four DualShock 4s or four controllers of any kind? No, they mean you can only have four controllers of any kind on the PS4. Yes.
Say that sometimes fast.
Maybe it's the former, which would mean that the console will support more Rock Band or Buzz controllers. No. That would make little sense, though. Still, I don't care that much. Last time I played a couch co-op was maybe 2 years ago when I played NHL 3-on-3 Arcade with two of my friends. Other than that, I don't remember what else I played. I use my second controller while the other one is charging, and that's it. For move games, you usually don't... For move games, you usually don't have enough space in the room to fit three or four people playing, so it's two people times two controllers, four total, and that's enough. At four external hard drives. This is unclear to me. Do they mean the media storage as well, i.e. movies and music on an external hard drive? This wouldn't make much sense. Again, no, they just meant you can't... Well, actually, they can do any external hard... No, I think... You know, I think they only mean game storage. I don't think they mean, external storage of any kind in which you can store music and games. So I think you can still do music and video on it. This wouldn't make sense again. It shouldn't be that hard to support an external USB drive on the OS. So maybe they do mean game and game data. 500 gigabytes isn't that much if you count all the games you... Okay. 500 gigabytes is not that much if you count all the games you download with the PSN Plus. I own a 120 gigabyte PS3 and I need to cycle my games constantly, which is not convenient. I'm getting a 1 terabyte disk soon, and I want to put it on the PS4 and move the 500 gigabyte hard drive onto the PS3. I'm not sure the warranty is void if you do it, and to be honest, Sony encourages the disk to be exchanged. See the 12 gigabyte flash iteration of the PS3. Yes, they that you do not void your warranty when you swap out your internal hard drive on the PS4. They already said that. However, it won't be supported for a while, so you're just going to have to sit tight. Five, Final Fantasy XIV. I believe the only reason they're continuing to re-release new games is to learn the Roman numerals. By the way, on that note, Sony had to pulled Final Fantasy XIV off PlayStation Network because, once again, that MMO is a complete and utter disaster, which makes you wonder why in the world they spent all that time rebuilding it and just came out with the same old crap. Square, stop making MMOs. You're not good at it. Don't. Stop. Don't. Just leave it alone. This is one area you do not know how to do. Focus on making an entertaining Final Fantasy game. Hopefully Lightning Returns is that. But judging from the past, maybe you should just retire Final Fantasy, you know?
Maybe what Powell will do is he will take that quote and he will print it on a t-shirt and he will send it to you.
Six, the question of the week. If it ain't broke, I'm not getting a new one. And by the way, the question of the week was, have you ever replaced your one form factor of a console with a new one, like trading in your PS1 and getting a PS1 Slim, that sort of thing? That's my way of thinking. And since I've never had a console break, I've never exchanged one. To be fair, I've only owned an NES, a PS3, and a Vita. I'm not counting some of the old TV consoles that played Pong. So my experience is limited. Maybe that'll change with the PS4, which I'll get at launch. The chances that it'll last 6 to 8 years are slim, but I guess, but I'm hopefully wrong. Seven, at Jordan, have you played Killzone Mercenary on your Vita? That's a AAA exclusive you've been waiting for. I'm not a huge FPS fan, and I'm not good at them, especially online, but I really like this game, and it plays very well on the handheld. Jordan hasn't played Mercenaries yet. He's planning on getting it, and it's supposed to have some really, really good graphics, and the AI is supposed to be really good, but otherwise it's just Killzone, which... And finally, I'm going off the grid for a week, so I'll miss the next episode. You will probably talk about the new Vita model. Have you noticed that the mysterious connector has disappeared from it? The one next to the game slot on top of the device? Any ideas what that was supposed to do anyway? Jordan would have the answer to that one. I don't. My thing is that I'm glad you kept it brief, because I would have hated to see what the elaborate version was like. We'd probably be talking 20 minutes from now.
It was probably a novella.
Yeah. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us some comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestudios.com. Also, subscribe to us in iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You know, I have an idea for you. You know, if you ever want to write an article, you know, a feature article, either complaining or just writing review, let me know, because I can put it on GameStooge, because it's very hard for me to keep content on GameStooge while I'm working hard on Strategy Informer. So anyways, you can also look for Dan's podcast, which is...
Polycast over at thepolycast.net. All about Civilization, strategy, multiplayer, console, and yes, we even have a podcast that's dedicated to the now defunct Civilization world.
Yeah. So anyways, 326 will be next week, and we'll see you then.
Game on.